Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Studio is bubble today. Great to have you with us. As we're in Bloomington, Indiana. And if I had the ability not to hear myself back in my headphones. There we go. That feels better.
Anything I could do to make your day better, Steven. You did well, though, in hearing yourself in a full second delay. I mean, I don't even think the folks at Good Morning America could handle it that well.
By the way, repeat what you said at the beginning. What was that part? Anything you could what?
Anything I could do to help you, I think is what I said.
Why the change in policy after 3 years?
Just trying to make a step in the right direction, Steve.
By the way, Dave Bryan, SteelersDepot.com, on the change of defensive coordinators for the Steelers. Keith Butler is going to be the new Steeler defensive coordinator. We'll hear from him coming up later in the show today. Here on the show, and we'll be here till 5. Ohio State won last night, winning convincingly 42-20 over Oregon. And we had mentioned yesterday some of the keys we thought going in were the fact that they play an umbrella cover 2, you can get underneath it, that if Elliott ran for 150 yards or better. And Urban Meyer did something yesterday I thought that was that he has to have credit for. When you're playing a team that is up-tempo and you're trying to keep them neutralized and off the field, he went for it 3 times on 4th down and he made it. Now, you're rolling the dice at that point, but you also have power in your lineup with your offensive line owning the line of scrimmage, which they did, and you also have a power back who's owning the game like he did. So maybe it's not as much of a gamble, but the key to him was not only winning the game by putting points on the board, but doing it by possessing the football. And then the third part that we mentioned yesterday about Oregon was quite simple. That when they fall behind in games, and I made a major point of this yesterday, it is not their offense that lets them down in comebacks. It is their defense that lets them down in comebacks. There's a reason they fall behind in games is because they are not up to the task defensively, and they have an inability to get stops that then allows the offense to do what they do. Too often, Oregon was in 3rd and long in this game, 3rd down 8, 3rd and 9. It was about the average. I think it was 3rd and 8.3 or something like that. Ohio State had 3rd and 5 on the average. They were able to win 1st and 2nd down consistently. Oregon could not win 1st or 2nd down, and they also had a long field to work with. In fact, if Ohio State doesn't turn the ball over 4 times, how bad is that score last night?
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you and kind of comment. I mean, you and I were kind of sharing a few texts back and forth, and one of the things I said is you can't rely on your defense making a stop by getting a turnover every time. Well, they still got 4 of them, and it still didn't matter. I mean, how many times do you see a team win by 20 or more with 4 turnovers?
I also thought Mark Helfrich did not have a good night coaching his football team. Early on, they had a chance to go for a field goal. They went for it on 4th down. I know that's their MO. There are moments where you've got to sit back and say, I need points here. And I thought that was not a good move before he even made it. I thought, this is not the point to go for. You take points here. But I thought Urban Meyer made a really good move last night against this team. Sometimes you go against the book, and I'll roll the dice to possess the football and keep them off the field.
I think the other thing that I noticed, the other thing that I noticed too is their version of a midline option, Ohio State, really had the linebackers confused. The blocking schemes were outstanding up front. The only time Oregon really showed any sort of run-stopping ability was when it was less than 2 yards.
Look, Oregon, midline option or not, Oregon can't line up and knock anybody off the ball offensively up front, and conversely, they get knocked off the football. Simple as I was shocked that Oregon kept trying to run up the middle. Like, what are you seeing that I don't?
That made no sense.
What are you looking at? I mean, that's Washington and Bennett in the middle. You're a speed team. You're a finesse team. Stop trying to prove that you're something else. You're not that. You're a speed team. Get to the outside. And they didn't. And to the credit of Ohio State, this is where coaching does come into play here. And I'll give Urban Meyer and his staff a lot of credit. When you sit down and you put together your plan for the season, you take a lot of time to go through the tapes of everybody you're going to play across the board. And when you have a bowl game, you have more time. So they had more time to break down everything Alabama did. They obviously took a lot of time to break down Florida State and Oregon as a contingency, but you still, and essentially, to put in your game plan, you don't have as much time to put it in. And they adjusted pretty quick in 11 days and put in the plan they needed to. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. Elliott's just a really good running back. He's just really, really good.
But you know, the other thing you have to give Urban Meyer some credit for is, here's a guy that had his first-string quarterback go down, his second-string quarterback go down, and oh yeah, the guy who actually lost the job as second string came in right before the Big Ten championship game, played the three arguably biggest games of the year, and didn't really lose the game for you. Made a couple of mistakes, but didn't lose it.
Well, they managed the game really well for him.
Right.
There's no question about that. You notice they did. There's certain things they didn't do that really, for lack of a better, took the thinking process out of it. You know, not as much stuff that they would do with an H-back and so forth that took another option off the table. And they executed that part really well. The part about him being a third-string quarterback is interesting. Braxton Miller took no snaps in the spring, you know.
Right.
The only quarterbacks that took snaps in the spring were JT Barrett and Jones. They were the only two. Braxton Miller only took snaps for 1 week in the preseason. One. That's it. Barrett and Jones and then Stephen Collier, who's the third, whom they're very high on, by the way, they're the ones that took the snaps the rest of the preseason. So in the last 12 months, Braxton Miller has only taken snaps for 1 week. That's been it. And I remember talking to Paul Keels, and Paul sent me a really great picture of the broadcast team last night after the game in celebration, which was nice. But I remember talking with Paul Keels before the Penn State game, and he's the one that pointed out to me, he says, this thing about Braxton Miller is a bit deceptive, Steve. He says, you know, he's only taking snaps 1 week. He said, Barrett and Jones took all the snaps in the spring. He says, so there's a little bit of mythology about this. Because back in the spring, Barrett and Jones both prepared as if they were going to be in the spot. Now, then Barrett won the job. So then Jones coming in as the number two guy, and he was the number two guy all year, and he took a snap in the Penn State game. He ran a quarterback draw, if you recall. And so Jones had been the number two guy all year. And Barrett won the job in the preseason and won it convincingly. And I think with Barrett at quarterback, they still win the national championship. I still think he's the better quarterback. I watch him play. I love how Barrett plays. Quick. He doesn't have the power, obviously, that Jones does, but there aren't many 250-pound quarterbacks. And give Jones credit. He is now the first guy in the history of college football to start three games and win three rings.
Was the offense any different with Jones at the quarterback, at the helm of the offense, than Barrett?
Simpler.
Yeah. I mean, it looked as if they kind of stayed, for lack of a better way to describe it, in his wheelhouse the last few weeks.
Of course they did. I mean, and that's just good coaching. I mean, don't sit there and throw more at him than you're going to do. I mean, that's counterproductive.
I think some coaches get so stuck in their own comfort zone that this is the type of offense we have to run no matter who's at quarterback. That's where I thought Ohio State really did the right thing here.
I think most coaches do. One of the keys to practice is this. You find out early in the week what you can and you can't do. And what you can't do gets eliminated from your plan. And sometimes what you can't do is because of what the quarterback can't do. Sometimes your quarterback can do it, but guess what? The wide receiver doesn't do it. Sometimes you do it and the right tackle doesn't handle it right. So one of the more important things that you do when you put together a game plan is you figure out early in the week who can't do what. And if somebody can't do something, you can't force feed it, you can't use it. You just can't. And that's actually one of the big parts of practice, is that you find out what you can do, and more importantly, what you can't do. And what you can't do gets eliminated. That's why when you hear, that's really a plain vanilla game plan. Well, I don't understand. That's because you find out in practice that you had to take stuff out.
Vanilla's your flavor.
I mean, because even though you may have eight guys that can handle something that's complicated, if you have three guys that can't quite handle it on a consistent basis, you can't use it. Sometimes it's that. I mean, that's why football is, you talk about the ultimate team game, that's what makes it the ultimate team game. You really have to have 11 guys that actually do it right.
I am a little bit bugged about all the comments in the last 12 hours or a little over 12 hours now that said, this justifies the playoff situation because here's a team that wasn't even expected to be there. They've won it. It's one time. All right, is it good for the tournament, for the playoff setting? Yeah, it's great for the playoff scenario. But let's not say that this is perfect just yet. It's been only one season.
Well, let me put it this way. They got an 18.5 rating last night.
You could have had just about anybody in that game and had an 18.5 rating, though.
Well, I'm saying, but that's part of the justification. The two semifinals were both over 15s, and the championship game was over 18. People love games with stakes.
I think this is a great idea. I think this is a step in the right direction. It's a great idea. It's not what I would think is the perfect scenario, but it's pretty darn close right now. I just wouldn't jump out of my skin to say this is it just yet.
What's your perfect scenario?
8.
Where Freebird. With no nose in to neighborhood. Who are you going to call?
Snowbusters!
And we've got the Snowbusters right here at Sunbury Motors Kia.
I wanna see you in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Make tracks in an all-wheel drive 2015 Sportage LX starting at $22,399. And we have a great inventory to choose from. Or how about our blizzard-busting 2015 all-wheel drive Sereno starting at $24,983 with 0% APR financing for up to 60 months. And we've got 27 to choose from. Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty.
Come see the Snowbusters
at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf
or at sunburymotors.com.
SMC. Selling more cars, satisfying more customers for 100 years.
Tax and tags extra. All applicable Kia customer rebates apply. KMF bonus cash and financing to well-qualified customers.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Fourth Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Dallas Cowboys just about set to go with a five-year contract agreement with Jason Garrett to be the head coach. Las Vegas has already installed Ohio State as the favorite for next year's college championship. And one other note, Penn State football, of course, Thursday is the day where players can declare for the NFL draft. And Penn State football, they had a meeting, team meeting, everybody had to be there. In case you're wondering, Anthony Zettel and Jordan Lucas were both in attendance at the team meeting. Steelers have made a change with their defensive coordinator. It'll be Dick LeBeau out. Kevin personally drove him to the airport. And
you make it sound like I'm happy about that.
Well, look, you blame coaches for everything.
Yes.
And Dick LeBeau is out. Now, John Butler is not in, but Keith Butler is. He makes the ascension from linebacker coach, where he's been with the Steelers since 2003, to being the defensive coordinator. We now bring in Dave Bryan, SteelerDepot.com. Dave, welcome, and tell us about the change.
Steve, thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. Dave, let's get to Keith Butler. This is not an unknown to Steeler fans. He has been the linebackers coach since 2003. Discuss what he brings to the table that initially you like.
What I like initially is that he's dealt with so many personalities and so many different linebacker types over the years to start with. I think that's something that you're not going to hear a lot about over the coming days. You know, we'll talk a lot of scheme and being the successor to Dick LeBeau. But remember, this guy has been, you know, in the NFL, as you said, since 2003, understands the Steelers organization, understands the different personality types. I talked to Chris Hoke, former Steelers nose tackle, Chris Hoke, who has actually served, you know, kind of as an off-season assistant with the Steelers since walking away from the game. And, you know, he reiterated that same type of thing, you know, with me. He is a different guy, of course, than Dick LeBeau. Now, he, of course, was raised in the Dick LeBeau system. But, you know, much like if you were to get promoted ahead of, you know, over your boss, you're going to have different ideas. So while some elements of LeBeau's 3-4 would probably obviously going to be there, I think he's going to bring, you know, a few different ideas and elements to this defense, which, I mean, let's face it, this is a defense that has not registered more than 37 sacks over the course of the last 4 years, and this is a defense that gave up 50 passing plays of 20 yards or more last season. That's also in transition still from going from older to younger.
In transition, you talked about the numbers they put up the last couple of years there. Dick LeBeau is 77. Were you surprised at all that there was a parting of the ways? Did it catch you off guard, or was it something you said, you know what, yep, I saw that coming?
Yeah, I mean, you knew there was the possibility heading into this offseason, especially after four straight seasons now of this team unable to get pressure and sacks and turnovers. When you add that together with, you know, the Steelers doing their best to keep Keith Butler in-house dating back to what, you know, five years ago. I mean, Keith Butler has been a guy that other teams have sought after as a defensive coordinator, talking about Miami, talking about Arizona, last offseason, talking about Tennessee. They probably maybe expected LeBeau maybe to hang it up a little bit sooner, and he obviously wasn't ready to do that. It'll be interesting to see really how it all went down behind closed doors. LeBeau made sure to break the news to his hometown paper first, telling him that he resigned and that he's not retiring. So if they did not, you know, Butler's contract, it was up after this season. So if it wasn't going to be this year, he was probably going to be gone. So He was the long-time, you know, been viewed as the long-term, long-time, you know, successor to LeBeau. And, you know, I'm not overly shocked by it, no.
All right, now let's get to the other part. Mike Tomlin, of course, has to be part of this decision as well. And, of course, that's the side of the ball that he cut his teeth on as he moved through the ranks in the NFL. Is it always been your sense that Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler were two guys a little more closer in age that had similar philosophies on what they wanted to do?
Well, you know, Tomlin's got a background mostly in a 4-3, you know, dating back to the time with Tampa Bay, and then, of course, his time in Minnesota as a defensive coordinator. You know, some Tampa 2 stuff in there, whereas Keith Butler has primarily been a 3-4 guy. So, now, are they going to kind of mesh together on some things? I can see that. And Steve, I promise you this, the buzzwords that you're going to be hearing from now until the start of the season is being multiple and the word hybrid. Because, I mean, let's face it, and Tomlin kind of hit on this last March when he was talking at the owners' meeting, talking about differences between 3-4 and 4-3. The game of football has really, really changed over, you know, since the death of the fullback. We're seeing offenses be more multiple. We see the birth of the hybrid tight end. We see teams go more 3 wide. And Tomlin kind of addressed that last March, saying, look, you know, it's more about sub-package football than it is anything else. The problem with the Steelers is, unlike other teams, they haven't been able to play as much sub-package as they would like over the years. In fact, we just wrapped up our charting project from 2014, and roughly, you know, they only had more 3 or more defensive backs on the field for right at 50% of the time. I'm willing to bet if you ask, you know, Mike Tomlin point blank, if he would like to be able to be in, you know, sub-package football a little bit more than that, I bet he would tell you yes. So I think that's the goal. Will we see the Steelers take the path, maybe as like the Packers have done recently, instituting kind of the elephant position, you know, that they did with Julius Peppers and Mike Neal and Nick Perry over there? You know, Dom Capers is as old school as they get, but even he saw the need to kind of be more multiple. You can run a 3-4 and still give yourself 4-3 looks if you have the right personnel. This team definitely, though, needs to get out after the passer better regardless, and they're going to need another pass rusher or two, I think, during this offseason.
And you and I both know it's a copycat league. We know that from every single year. You look at last night's championship game, Oregon and Ohio State, and, of course, Chip Kelly is in the NFL. And one thing that we've noticed about Chip Kelly in 2 years in the NFL is that his offense is innovative. We know that. It can be effective. But what stifles it? Defenses that have elite athletes. So are we starting to see the Steelers make a transition, not just in defensive coordinator, but in philosophy, that they need elite athletes at all 11 positions? Because, as you mentioned, they had that mix of older and younger.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's the goal for all 32 teams in this league. The more players that you can have on your 53 that can do more things, even the better. And, I think last night was a perfect example of that. Plus, I mean, let's face it, Oregon's got some athletes on the defensive side of that football. The thing, too, that I find interesting about Oregon is sometimes that up-tempo offense of theirs, sometimes they can move too quick and they put their defense back out on that field too quick. Right. And Ohio State just wore them down with that power and that counter. But, you know, we talk about the more hybrid defenses now in the NFL. I think you need more people that can do more things too. Because look, you see these defenses now. Look at Seattle and how much of a rotation they use with that front of theirs. They take one piece of the puzzle out and they put another one in there, and they don't skip the beat there. So I think you need to kind of simplify things with this defense. Because, I mean, let's face it, LeBeau's defense has always been known as being so complicated that young players couldn't, you know, get on the field quick enough. So not only will Butler be charged with that, but I think he needs to have a larger selection of players rather than just 11 or 12 that he could roll out there. And you might see a little bit more, you know, more of a situational type player or two in this defense moving forward as well.
You talked about what Green Bay does, and Green Bay will blitz. Seattle doesn't blitz that often because the front four, and you mentioned how they rotate personnel. Jordan Hill out of Penn State had been an important part of that till he got hurt. But if they can get to a situation where they're not blitzing as often, just discuss the importance of building a multiple front and how it could change how the Steelers play if they can do that and suddenly be more effective in coverage.
Well, I think the idea with fronts, and especially, you know, Green Bay does this great with that elephant position with Peppers. And you know, we saw them even move Clay Matthews around quite a bit in there. I talk about Mike
right.
Neal. If you can line up those guys up there and nobody knows who's coming, you can beat you know, 5-6 man protection by only sending three guys because of the illusion of pressure sometimes because of teams overloading one side as opposed to the other. You know, if you get the right matchup, one-on-one matchup, regardless of whether it's 6-on-3, then you leave your man to beat the other man. And I think that's what you that the Steelers need to do more of in situations. We see Ray Horton doing this now, you know, and Ray Horton was a former defensive backs coach with the Steelers. He, of course, now is with Tennessee. Look at all the chaos that he was able to do a couple of times this season. Although, you know, the Titans didn't have a great record, their defense really shows signs of moving in the right direction, in my opinion, and that's because not only were they bringing massive numbers at times, at other times when it looked like they were bringing the numbers, they'd only rush 3 or 4.
Is Ryan Shazier the kind of player that brings some multiplicity to the table that can be used?
Yeah, I think so. Now, you know, people are saying, well, can we just move Ryan Shazier outside to a 3-4 outside linebacker traditional? No, I don't think you can see that. I don't think he has enough sand in his britches for starters. Right now, you know, you could probably kind of say the same thing about Jarvis Jones. But Ryan Shazier is a guy that you can move around situationally and at times bring him from the edge. You could probably interchange on certain downs and distances, putting Jarvis Jones inside and then rushing Ryan Shazier off the edge. All about creating matchups to trying to exploit what the offense is going to do. But traditionally, are we going to see Ryan Shazier move outside? I doubt it. You know, are we going to see Jarvis Jones be able to play kind of an elephant position? I kind of doubt it. But, you know, both of those players are definitely going to be key moving forward with this defense because, A, you've got first-round draft picks invested in them. And second, do we really know what either one of these two kids are right yet? You know, so it's got to be a huge offseason for both of those guys. Jarvis has to get stronger, needs to work on being more than just a guy out that tries to beat tackles to the outside. And Ryan Shazier needs to stay healthy, learn the game better, and get stronger in addition.
Dave, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time very much.
Steve, anytime you need me, I'm here for you. Have a great weekend.
That's Dave Bryan, SteelerDepot.com. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Back home again in Indiana, and it seems that I can see.
You know I couldn't help myself. You know I couldn't help myself.
That's one of the reasons I want to take the show here.
All right. Unfortunately, the Big Ten had other plans for you.
We were here in November, and we had dinner at Grazzi just up the street. Really nice Italian restaurant. And Roger Corey said that he wanted to open the game the next day by doing that. That suggestion came after a series of libations. That is not how he opened the game the next day. But he did mention he wanted to. Dirk Cutter, former Arizona coach, now he's an offensive coordinator in the NFL, they asked him about franchise quarterbacks. Said the thing people have to realize, those guys aren't out there walking on the streets. That's good advice for you.
Well, you're trying to say that there's that, you know, they don't grow on trees or anything like that?
They just aren't that many of them. I know you think there are a ton, but there aren't. That's why the Andy Dalton thing, for example, let's get to that, for example. Okay? They're in a tough spot because, again, if you replace him, it has to be an upgrade.
Well, is the bar really set that high? I mean, it is set to a decent regular season.
No, it's set to a point where he gets you to the playoffs. But the question, see, and he's not the only, he's an example here. This is not, there are other guys that fall into this category. When you get a franchise quarterback, the Steelers have one. The Colts have one. The Patriots have one. Yeah. And you get a guy that's not quite that, but is good, you're now in an interesting spot because now what do? I mean, you tell me, if say they dropped him, who do they get that's going to make them better? Alex Smith is a lot like that. First overall pick, sort of got the 49ers to a certain point. Gets to the Chiefs to a certain point, but doesn't get them, you know. But then if you get rid of them, now who do you have playing? That's a big problem. And this is where the Eagles had to make a really tough decision, because they're really in that spot too right now. So now that brings up this about Chip Kelly, who was at the game last night, and Marcus Mariota. Obviously, he recruited him to go to Oregon. He had him early in his system. And Mariota is, at least for the moment, going to be pigeonholed into being a system quarterback. And Chip, of course, gives you the feeling that he is a system guy. So Todd McShay of ESPN, who's their draft analyst, this is what he put down about Mariota. This is after last night's game. The more I study Mariota's Oregon tape, the harder it is for me to find throws that translate to the NFL game. When I went back and charted his passes from the Florida State game, screens, dump-offs, and scrambles were more common than the type of downfield throws required by NFL offenses. It's not that he never makes those throws, but it's hard to find too many of those on tape, and the success rate isn't great on them. McShay then concluded, ultimately, teams could very well decide that Mariota's on-field issues, he has outstanding intangibles, are a bigger concern. I think he absolutely has the tools and potential to develop into a very good NFL quarterback, but teams are going to have to gamble on him being able to get better in a lot of areas in which he hasn't had much experience or great success to this point. That's where you bring in Chip Kelly. He knows him better than any other coach in the NFL.
And he also has control over player personnel right now and could actually have the authority to make a move to get him.
Yes, he does. And he says he's the most talented kid that I ever coached in college. He's referred to him as that. And Kelly, of course, is the guy that designed the system. He's had to really change his offense a bit in the NFL because he's had Michael Vick, Nick Foles, Mark Sanchez. And one thing that you noticed again last night, what really, and this is why I've said over the years that I didn't think Oregon or Baylor could win national championships, what stifles that offense?
When you can't stop anybody on defense.
That's part of it, but the other part is that when you have defenses that also have elite athletes. Well, guess what the NFL is loaded with? A lot of defenses with elite athletes. Ohio State has a defense with some elite athletes on it. Joey Bosa, Josh Perry, Darren Lee, Von Bell, Tyvis Powell. I mean, Eli Apple. They have some elite athletes on their defense. You notice defensively, Ohio State didn't have a lot of trouble with the pace last night. And in the NFL, I mean, the Eagles were taken apart by Seattle. They're loaded with elite athletes.